Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the combine is complete. There are some free agency, some movements have been made where we kind of discuss some players that may be available for the Lions who might not be so available. Now that the couple of weeks has passed, we're going to cover kind of both of those things. It's mainly going to be the combine, mainly talking about future potential Lions. You know, we're going to do it position by position as always. How did the combine shape up for you? Does it get better for you every year? Or are you getting tired of it? Is it too overexposed?
A little bit of both, I think, right? Like, I think by the end of the fourth day, I'm tired. At the same time, I think I'm constantly like figuring out how to streamline it a little bit better. Like, for example, I used to feel the burden of trying to watch it live and then like tweet about it and take notes on it. And like, it just, I tried to stretch myself too thin. So, you know, over the years, I've narrowed my focus. I've stopped trying to tweet about it unless something interesting happens, and kept my focus just on things that are happening live. I figured out how to have like the NFL feed going so that I can keep watching during commercial breaks, and you know, it's, everything gets a little smoother. I'm willing to pause it now instead of trying to like constantly push through. So I think I've streamlined it to make it a little easier on myself. At the same time, it's a grueling 4 day 4 days, and I'm constantly event. Writing articles, you know, after each position group. And so, yeah, it adds up, but it's behind us. And I think the whole point is you're trying to learn as fast as possible. And I feel like I came out of the event with more knowledge, right? And that's what
more knowledge and renewed vigor.
Yeah. And you know, look, a lot of the stuff is just like checking boxes, right? Like that's how teams view it. For us in the media, we're still learning. But for the team, they're checking boxes. And I felt like there was a lot of that this year. There was a few guys that I think stood out with good performances. A few guys stood out with poor performances. But overall, there wasn't a ton of movement on my Lions base board. I'll have an updated version going out maybe by the time people are listening to this. Hopefully by the time people are listening to this, I'm hoping to get it out Sunday morning. And it'll have all the combine numbers, slightly new rankings, updated versions of the different analysts that we look at, their boards as well. Like Daniel Jeremiah updated his, as did PFF, and Brandon Thorne upgraded his OL ranking. So like, there was a bunch of these guys that did some upgraded rankings. So I updated the board as well to follow that, added my own spin on things, and kind of narrowed the focus a lot. So yeah, we'll talk about that today, and hopefully people can follow along with a new board in front of them.
All right. We're going to start with the quarterbacks. As we discussed in our last visit with one another, this is not a need for the Lions, you know, compared to our last how many years of doing this show. You know, Lions have Jared Goff, Lions have Hendon Hooker. Those are the only two guys under contract. Maybe they add Nate Sudfeld back. Maybe they bring back another veteran or bring in another veteran. Teddy Bridgewater's retired. We'll touch on it because, you know, everybody's listening kind of has an idea of all these quarterbacks, maybe even has in their own mind in what order they should go. There's a few guys in it that we've seen a bunch over the years. Looks like the Bears are going to draft Caleb Williams number one.
Yeah, it feels like it, right? He's going to go number one, I think, no matter what, whether the Bears trade out or not. He seems to have pulled away, even skipping everything at the combine. He seemed to come out of it still on the positive side with his conversations with teams and stuff. So Caleb, I think kind of he should be number one. After that, it's a bit of a coin flip between who goes next. Drake May and Jaden Daniels, neither of them did anything either. So there's, you know, rumors about those guys, 'cause it's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
JJ McCarthy did stuff. I don't.
Threw the
I
ball
thought it was,
61 miles an hour.
Yeah, which is surprisingly fast. I didn't think he had that level of cannon in him. You know, he's got a lot of other traits that are really appealing to NFL teams, but it was a little faster than I thought he would go. But in my opinion, it just seems like he's kind of solidified himself as that four spot. There's talk of him even jumping up into maybe the two or the three spot for some teams. And
Wow.
I'm still sticking with the fact that I think all four are off the board by pick 11. And there's a chance Bo Nix or Michael Penix sneaks into the back half of the first round. So not really a whole lot's changed since our last conversation. I think if anything, it was a little bit more solidified. And I think McCarthy is probably locked in at QB4 or better for me.
Now, we shouldn't drone in too much on this because the Lions aren't going to select JJ McCarthy. It's
sure,
not going to happen.
But he's the Michigan
quarterback. Yeah.
We're going to face them too. Like we're going to, it's a good chance we face two of these guys twice a year, right?
Right. Now, JJ, do you really think he could be? I mean, I guess we really don't know. And you'll give a good Michigan answer, but you know, he was on a team that won a Penn State game by running the ball the last 32 plays of the game, right? Wasn't that the Penn State game?
Yes.
So, and they'll say, is like, well, they couldn't stop the run, which is fair, a fair set. But at the same time, if he's that great, why don't they let him throw the ball? He didn't really throw the ball much this year. Like, I don't know. Like, I go back and forth on this. Like, maybe he is really good, but at the same time, it's like they would have used him more, even if, regardless of how damaging their running game is, like they still would have tried to show him off a little bit more. It seems a little bit like they reined him in so everybody couldn't really see the warts that come with him. I don't know. I could just be a non-Michigan fan saying those things.
Well, certainly that's the narrative, right? That's what a lot of people believe. I think there's validity to that. At the same time, one thing that people don't talk about with that Penn State game was that was Sherrone Moore coaching that game. It was
not Harbaugh. Yep.
Yeah, in Nittany Valley or in Happy Valley. It's Happy Valley. In Happy Valley, on the road against a top five team, with a top five at the time or top seven, regardless.
They were highly ranked,
highly ranked team. In all honesty, Sherrone Moore is a run first coach. He is the offensive line coach in addition to the coordinator and head coach for that game. I'm sure he was looking at that game and feeling a little bit of panic about not wanting to let that season slip away. Because that if it slips away there, you know, national championships off the board, basically. So I think he went ultra conservative. They were also getting, like you said, a really impressive runs, you know, rushing yards per clip at that point. And so I just think he didn't want to risk it. A little bit of timidness from Sherrone, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, you know, look, Harbaugh didn't try to utilize JJ, or, you know, the offense that he ran was more focused on, you know, running the ball than passing the ball, which is going to make his time with the Chargers fascinating because, you know, right.
Well,
they've got an upper echelon quarterback. And if he takes the ball away from him, it'd be interesting to see what happens there.
They're good. It'll be more like I think it would be more like a Goff situation where they'll try to build the running game, you know, because they have Greg Roman, right? Isn't Greg Roman their offensive coordinator? Or did he?
Oh, no, he ended up. It may be. He might be. I know he's got a couple guys coming back that he's coached with before.
We were
going to
head in this direction.
It doesn't matter. Regardless, with JJ, with JJ, I think the talent is there. You just haven't seen it consistently. But all these guys have flaws, right? I mean, they all do. There's Drake May is a guy they've talked about as being in contention for the number one pick a month ago, and now they're talking about him sliding to number four, QB4. Like, it's just, it's all over
Nobody
the place
knows.
Right now.
It's a crap
right.
shoot.
Yeah, exactly.
It always has been.
I think Jaden Daniels, his mobility makes him a very appealing
trait. But he's weirdly undersized.
He is. And that's why he didn't measure in. Light. Yes. Light and weight. But he didn't weigh in. He didn't measure. And so then there's questions around that. Like, it's one thing for like Caleb to be like, hey, I'm going to go in the top three picks. So I'm only going to like give my information to those top three teams.
Right.
It's not as clean for Jaden, I don't think, but whatever, he made the choice he made. That's fine. But yeah, like he's that mobility is going to, attract some teams, right? And was it Washington picks number two, right?
Right.
And so you've got a defensive minded head coach in Washington, and he may look at that and say, boy, that mobility just gives him an extra element that makes it hard for defenses. I'd like that guy on my offense. And so maybe Washington just grabs him at two. So it's kind of up in the board. I think that all four of them have enough upside to warrant a top pick, or at least a gamble on him. And, of the bunch, Cable's probably the top guy, and the other ones will go into top 11.
Greg Roman is the offensive coordinator of the Chargers. I would assume they're going to try to build around the run, but with a heavy dose of passing, Harbaugh's not. He's a weirdo. He's no dummy though when it comes to coaching. So I'm sure he's got a plan already.
Is accurate.
All right, Joe Milton threw the ball 62 miles an hour. He had the strongest arm, former Michigan quarterback. I just wanted to mention that. Any
Yeah,
of
he
these
threw the
guys late?
ball.
Sorry.
I was gonna say he threw the ball like 70 plus yards. It was pretty
Right.
ridiculous.
He's got a big arm. But
I, you
and I
know,
think teams will be interested in that, but at the same
yeah.
time, he wasn't the greatest quarterback.
No, he's super raw. Decision making's got some questions on it. But like any of the guys that are projected to go on day three or even had good days, I think the Lions are going to be out of the
Not
conversation
interested.
after. Yeah, like Michael Pratt and Rattler, they had good days, but that probably puts them in the fourth or fifth or sixth round type of thing, and that's going to probably take them off the board for the Lions if they're going to go in the fourth or fifth round. We'll see with Joe Milton. He's very traits oriented. He's got that relationship with Hendon Hooker. At the same time, I don't know if the Lions need to be using a pick on a quarterback. So if they let it go, there wasn't anybody at the combine that was like, oh, that guy looks really good if he goes undrafted. None of those, it didn't really stand out to me.
All right, so then let's forget quarterbacks altogether. Let's move on to running backs. Not once again, not a big time position of need. Maybe they'd be looking to add competition for the number three running back. They re-signed Zonovan Knight, right? That's happened since we last chatted. But they'll still be one of these guys, not necessarily ones that even ended up at the combine, but one of these guys on this rookie list is going to end up in camp with the team at the very least, if not two.
Yeah, at the combine, we basically saw the fact that there's like 10 different guys that could all be the top guy on somebody's board because none of them are really elite. They all like quarterbacks, they all have little flaws to their game. For me, I have particular guys that I like for the Lions better than others. And then at the same time, there's some guys like that I think will probably go in the third round that if they slide to day three would be interesting to the Lions. But without a fourth round pick, I don't know if they, okay, for example, if Ray Davis of Kentucky somehow slides to round four, that would be great value. But I can't see the Lions trading up into the fourth round to get a running back. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I don't think Ray's fallen to the fifth. And so Ray's probably not a guy that I'm going to be focused on. So if you start looking at the late round guys, there's really only a couple. Like when I did my preview, I mentioned like five different guys that I thought might go on day three. The only one of those five that actually like I thought did well and showed well and performed well and measured well and all that stuff was Vidal from Troy. I thought he had a good combine. I thought he looked good. I thought he had good measurables. Be very, I'm interested in him as I think he'll be there in the mid to late part of day three, which I think you could justify taking him because once you get to the fifth round, you're basically just gambling with those picks anyway. So I'd be okay. The other guy was Keelan Robinson out of Texas. He's a speed guy, third down back almost exclusively, I would think. And he's got kick return range, good speed. I thought he looked pretty good at the combine as well. But this is a guy who would be a specialty type back. A guy like Robinson would be your fourth running back and special team starter. Whereas a guy like Vidal could, I think he could challenge for RB3. whereas Robinson probably not. Those are the two guys that stood out to me. And I think Frank Gore Jr. is going to get some love, and he got some love on the broadcast. Guy,
right, well,
let's
partly because they all know his dad.
Exactly. Right.
That's part of it.
But those were the guys that kind of stood out to me. Just a couple of those late round guys. Again, not a pressing need. So
if they're going to look for some, it's going to be a specific role, taking a specific role.
The hard part about looking at guys late is that the whole time you're evaluating guys for their qualities, right? And so you're saying, I like this guy, I like this guy. The problem is then you think, oh, if I like them this much, they're probably going to go higher in the draft. And so then you're not thinking, oh, they're going to slide down, because if I like them, other teams are probably going to like them. And so they're not going to be available. Like Ray Davis from Kentucky is a great example. I think there's no way Ray Davis should be available in the fifth round. I'd be shocked if he was there, but if he was, I'd take him. Right. Like, but I don't think he's going to be there. So that's, and there's a couple other guys like that. A couple guys that I'm on there, like that I'm looking at and I'm saying, man, that guy would look really good, but there's no way he's going to slide all the way down to the fifth round. And so it's hard. That's the hard part about this is you like guys, but if you don't think they're going to be available, I might be glossing over them.
Well,
anybody really stand out?
No, not for me. You know, none of these guys. This is a poor running backs class, which means there's going to be like two really good guys come out of it. There's going to be like one of these guys is going to be a Pro Bowler in year one.
Well, but I mean, the thing is I've got 12 guys that I think could go anywhere between 55 and, 130, right? Which is like basically the fourth round. Well, 12 guys all go in between the third and fourth round? Probably not, right? So like somebody's probably going to fall, but I don't know how to point to which one. So like, raise the one that I would hope the Lions would jump at if he fell, but I just don't think he will.
All right, wide receiver group. Here is an area of potential need. Lions would be looking for an X receiver or somebody to provide further depth. There's a bounty at the top of the draft. Lions probably aren't going to be in the running for any of those guys, but you know, what did you see?
Well, a lot of talent, right? Now, instead of like 12 guys that could go in the fourth, the first four rounds, you're probably talking about 20 guys that can go in the first four rounds. Six or seven that could go in the first round alone, right? Three of them that could go in the top 10. So
it's a good year for this to be a need for the Lions.
Yeah, right. And like the thing is with receivers is this depth has been there each of the last like what four wide receiver classes. So like there's a bunch of young wide receivers in the NFL on rookie deals. And here's another one where a third of the league, or maybe over half the league, is going to get another one of these guys that is going to be a cheap option on a rookie deal. And it's getting to the point where you're like, man, how many wide receivers in free agency are actually going to make it? Or are you going to be, in a hurry to go sign guys in free agency when you could just draft one of these guys that you think will pan out? So it just seems like the market continues to be flooded with wide receiver talent. So if you're a veteran in free agency, that's, a bigger name than like Josh Reynolds, I wonder how things are going to be out there in the free agent market. A guy like Josh Reynolds, I don't think is going to command that much money. And in turn, but you get a lot of, you're getting more out of him than you would out of rookie because of leadership and consistency and trust and all that stuff. But it's going to be real tempting to take one of these guys. Right. And I think you have to include the fact that maybe they take one at 29. And if they do, there's probably four guys in the conversation. So like Harrison, Neighbors, Odunze are all going to be gone.
Gone, long gone.
Yeah. The chances are Brian Thomas from LSU is also probably going to be gone. Maybe even Mitchell from Texas. He might even be gone.
Really?
But if not, he's probably the top of the list to start paying attention to. Mitchell runs, he's over 6'2". He runs in the 4.3s. He's got good explosion, he's a good possession type receiver, can play the X. Like, it's a lot to like about Mitchell if Brian Thomas is off the board for the Lions. Now, again, taking a wide receiver in the first round is a bit of a luxury, so I'm not saying Mitchell's going to be near the top of my board, but when you start looking at need and fit and talent and value, Mitchell's a guy that's going to be near the top. Another guy that I think is going to be at the top is Ladd McConkey. I have so much not wanted to put Ladd McConkey this high on my board, but every time I
Is it
watch
because
him,
he's small?
yeah.
Smallish. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he's under 6 foot. He's under 190 pounds, right? He's both quick and fast. His route running is perfect. He catches everything in his radius, and he's always open. Always. Every time he makes a cut, no one can hang with him. It's unbelievable how much he's open. And so, there's so many things by when you watch him and you're like, he's a slot, so it doesn't make sense. Well, you know what? I think he can play outside. I think he actually might even play outside. But again, now you're putting in a guy who's under 6 foot on the outside. But again, if he's constantly open, you can justify it. And so McConkey is the sixth wide receiver on my board. And when I started this, he was probably 12th, right? He's worked his way all the way up to six because. Mainly because he's just constantly open. The fourth guy on my list here at the top is that I think falls into consideration for at 29 is Keon Coleman.
There we
Now,
go.
here's where it gets tricky, right? And I wrote an article specifically because I wanted to talk about Keon Coleman. I included other guys just to, chat about, expand my vision. But I wrote an article with Keon Coleman as my main target in mind. Of the top 15 guys on my draft board, okay, the top guys I think are going to go in the top 100 picks. So you're talking 15 or more. Not a single one ran over 4.5. They all ran 4.5 or under, okay,
Except Keon Coleman.
except Keon Coleman, who ran a 4.61. So why do I not care if he's a full 0.1 slower than everyone else? Well, because his GPS scores were off the charts and he was near the top, if not at the top, in
Interesting.
basically every single wide route category at the combine. So the whole combine, they talked about the fact that Puka Nacua ran the fastest gauntlet and how that's a translatable drill. Well, we're in the fastest gauntlet this year, Keon Coleman,
Keon Coleman.
right?
Interesting.
And so Coleman is a over 6'3", over 210 pounds. Yes, he ran a 4.6, but his GPS's play speed is faster and amongst the top in this class. And so he's a guy who, for a team like the Lions that value the GPS time, the play time over the 40. He's a guy I think that's going to be on their radar. Now, the reason what might be interesting is if he does slide, because people are looking at that 40 time and saying, man, if he can't run in a straight line down the field, then
We
he's
don't want
gonna
to. What?
gonna
Yeah. What's he going to be worth in the
we're gonna
NFL?
drop him. So if they don't take him at 29 and then he starts to slide into the second round, kind of a la Brian Branch, I'd have no problem with the Lions trading up to go get him. Because he is an ideal wide receiver X who plays faster than he thinks, and he's a huge target that can make wild catches all over the field, and he'd be a perfect complement to the St. Brown and J-Mo. He's perfect for what they want. So Coleman, because of that, Coleman's a guy I think is going to be in consideration at 29, may slide to the second. If he does, I'd be okay with them going and getting him, because he's a talented receiver that people are going to look at his 40 time and write him off. Now, I don't know if teams are, but a lot of the analysts are already doing it.
All right. So after those guys, say the Lions don't take one of those guys at 29 or at 58 or whatever trading they might do in there. They take an interior offensive lineman. They take a defensive lineman. They take a corner. Maybe that's the first three picks that come off the board for them. Mm-hmm. Who later? Who is somebody later that the Lions might be taking a look at?
Give me the caveat of if they decide to take a receiver at 72, pick 72,
that's where the first third round of their pick.
Right. Xavier Leggett is a guy who's very interesting to me. AJ Brown esque type of style, 6'1", 220, plays with a lot of yak, very physical. He'd be another guy that I think would fit in. I think he'd be in that conversation with the first of the third round picks. If you start sliding past that, you're getting into guys like Brennan Rice. Brennan Rice, Jerry Rice's kid. Yep. He's over 6'2". He ran like a 4.5 flat. I thought he was a little bit better than his. Like, okay, his dad's at the combine, and his dad is being critical of him because he's not running the routes exactly the way he wants. I thought he did okay, but you have to keep in mind that's going to be in his head like all the time. His dad is always going to be coaching him, and like he seems to have the mentality that he can withstand that. And so he's appealing to me. He's a guy that if you're talking about getting at the end of the third round, I think he would be there. And he's a guy I'm interested in.
You have the GPS note next to him.
Yeah, it's the same thing. He plays faster than he runs, right? He ran a 4.5, which is totally acceptable for his weight, his height and weight. But he's also a GPS guy. He runs faster than he plays. And so, or plays faster than he runs. And so he's another guy that I think is going to be higher on the Lions radar than, some other teams that use more raw numbers. Those are probably the two third rounders I like the best.
Puka Nacua. What was he, a sixth round pick? Or was he a fourth rounder?
He was on day three. I don't remember which one, but he was on day three.
The only reason why I say that is we don't really know, nobody knew, not even the Rams knew that Puka Nacua would be, a star player, right? When they drafted him. But
yeah.
And the Lions, even under Brad Holmes, I think it's only been Antoine Green so far, but like, it's hard to unearth a star late. We all know that.
Sure.
Is there anybody you're looking at the real late? You talked about guys around pick round 100, 110. What about guys near the end in the 200s? Any thoughts on any of those guys?
The one that stands out to me the most is the guy who I talked about in one of my pre-combine preview, which is Marcus Rosemary Jack Saint from Georgia. He's an elite blocker who's going to go late in the third round or late on day three. He's not a target hog, so you don't need to throw him a lot of balls. He doesn't never has commanded a lot of balls, and so his stock is going to be low because of that. He is an intense run blocker. He's probably not going to start for you or anything like that, but he's a guy who fits in with that mentality that they like. And so he makes a lot of sense. There's an undrafted guy named Josh Cephas out of University of Texas, San Antonio, UTSA, who was not at the combine, but he's a bit of a sleeper guy that I think could go late. And I would also fit in with what they're looking for this year's class. Most of the day three guys are like slot receivers. Like there's a lot of slot receivers right now. And
not on the Lions list of needs.
Right. Exactly. Especially if you're talking about adding a late guy, you're talking about someone who you can already turn to Khalif Raymond for in that role. So you've already got two really, really solid slot receivers. And so there's guys that I like that I just don't see the Lions being interested in, like Anthony Gould or out of Oregon State, Isaiah Williams out of Illinois. Isaiah Williams ran a terrible 40. He's 5'9", 180 and ran a 4.68. But if you watch him in drills, he's so much faster. Like he's super quick. He's probably another GPS guy, if I had to guess. But like the Lions don't have a need for a guy like him. So he doesn't jump up at me. Johnny Wilson's always a guy that comes up as a big X that people like. I'm just not in love with his game as much as other people are. 6'6.5", 231. He runs like a tight end, plays like a tight end, but he's listed as a receiver. There's some upside to him, but like I'm not in love with him as much as some of the other, football analysts are. If he's there in day three, like fifth round, I'd give him some consideration there, but like taking him in the top 100, like a lot of people are suggesting, is it's not on my radar.
All right, that's it for the wide receivers. Let's flip over to tight end. Now, tight end is not at all a position of need for the Lions. They got Sam Laporta. They tendered Brock Wright, a restricted free agent deal, right? They brought back Shane Zylstra. He should be healthy. They have Mitchell, Josh Mitchell. Is that
James.
James Mitchell? It seems like, why was Josh on my head? So they have those guys. And so they're likely not going to be addressing the position of tight end in the draft. Is there anybody you wanted to point out that you liked? Although the
I feel
Lions aren't
like
drafting him.
I feel like it's a maybe lighter class than normal. Typically, you see about 14 tight ends drafted each year. I've got about that, I think, on my am I that are draftable on my board, but I think maybe exactly 14. So it's probably an average class. It's just not as heavy at the top like it was like last year. Last year's class was so heavy at the top. This year's class is not going to be like that at all. Most of these guys are going to go on day three. The one who stood out to me the most at the combine was Tip Reiman. Excellent pass blocker or and run blocker.
Good name for a tight end.
I mean, look, he dropped a lot of passes at the combine. His routes weren't as crisp, but the ball was out of his catch radius, but he had to like bend for it. It was hard for him to bring it in. So he's not this elite. He's not going to be, a pass catcher where he's ever going to be like a TD T, tight end one, in my opinion. But he's a tremendous run blocker and a special teams aficionado. And if he's there, like in the fifth round, I'd give consideration to him. But again, not a super pressing need. It almost forced you to keep four tight ends, which I don't know if that's what they want to do or not. But he is, him and AJ Barner are the two best run blocking tight ends. And so those are the guys on my radar. I do expect both of them to be drafted in like the fifth, sixth round. So probably takes them off the Lions board, but not necessarily. Run blocking is really the key for me with like a tight end three. And so AJ Barner, Tip Reiman, those are the guys that caught my attention.
All right, flipping over to offensive tackle. Here is a likely position to need for the Lions. Yes, they do have Taylor Decker and Penei Sewell under contract, but Dan Skipper and Matt Nelson are not. So the Lions would be looking for a third offensive tackle. There's also a potential that an offensive tackle they might draft or sign, whether it's a
Sure.
draftable player or a free agent, one day might replace Sewell at right tackle if he moves to left, if Decker leaves, or however they want to set up. Maybe the guy is an exceptional left tackle, and if Decker moves on, he could just step right in that position. So who would we be looking at here?
So the way I've organized the board post combine is I've taken a lot of the guys that I think are going to would that would be guards for the Lions with tackle range and just shifted them to guard. Now it's possible maybe one of those guys could play tackle, but I've only left like the pure tackles or the guys I perceive as tackles first on my tackle board. So what you'll notice when you get the new board is the tackle group is looks a little lighter, and then the interior offensive line is going to look a lot heavier because I've moved all those guys over to the one unit or the one page so that you can see them all, and how they stack up against each other. So if we're talking about just kind of like offensive tackles and taking the guard aspect out of it, there's a couple of guys that caught my attention at the combine. The first and maybe highest rated one is Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame. He's a guy who I think is probably going to go in either like the third or the fourth round for the Lions if they are looking for an OT3. I could absolutely see them draft him with their second, third round pick and just be like, cool, he's going to be our OT3, but yet he has enough upside to maybe start a year from now when Taylor Decker's contract potentially expires. And so I'm okay spending a third rounder on a guy who may be a future starter for me down the road, kind of like what they're doing with Broderick Martin, right? Where they're going to draft him in the third round and then just kind of wait on him. Blake Fisher kind of fits that mold for me. He's a right tackle. He's been a right tackle for a while. He's seen a handful of left tackle snaps, but he's pretty much a right tackle. The swing options there for to be an OT3, but he's a guy who I think has starter upside at right tackle. And I'd be okay spending a third round pick on him in order to get him in the building. He's a redshirt sophomore, so he's still really young. He's got good size at like 6'6", 300. His everything's kind of like average, like from a measurable standpoint. But I was impressed with his movement. I was impressed with this play on the field. So Blake Fisher is the guy who really has kind of went up to the top of the once the top tackles are off the board. Him in the third round it makes some sense. The next guy is Roger Rosegarten from Washington, another right tackle who has the potential to play, be like a swing tackle OT3. Again, I think he's a little bit later, but I could justify maybe picking him in the third round because the Lions don't have a fourth round pick. But I'd rather get him in the fifth personally. I don't think his upside is as big as like Fisher's. But he's a guy who I like his potential. I like his upside. Might take him a little bit longer to get going. Good movement skills, good measurables for his size. Again, like 6'5" and a half, like 308. If you get further down the list into like your midday three guys for sure, the guy who stood out the most to me was Garrett Greenfield from South Dakota. Really good measurables and explosions, looked really good in the drills. Showed me the movement is what I liked to see. And I think again, he's another swing tackle OT3 type of guy who made some noise for me. I liked those three guys' performance at the combine. I had tagged a couple other guys pre-combine that I liked their tape, like Javon Foster from Missouri and Delmar Glaze from Maryland. Those are probably day three picks as well, but I really thought the Fisher, Rosengarten and Greenfield are the guys that caught my attention. Maybe you're spending a third on those top guys. Some of the others you can get on day three, and it just depends on how they view that, what that OT3 role is going to be. Is it just an OT3 role? Spend you might be able to be okay with the day three guy. If it's an OT3 role now, but maybe future starter. Maybe you're okay spending a third rounder on a guy like Fisher or Rosengarten.
Regardless of who they might take, I still have a feeling we will see Dan Skipper in a Lions uniform next year. Just a feeling. All right, moving inside to offensive guard, we'll also throw center in there. Frank Ragnow under contract. They have Pierschbacher still is the backup.
No, geez, Pierschbacher. That's a deep
That's an
pull.
old name. Who's the backup now? They have somebody under contract. Hang on.
Well, Michael Neese is under contract,
Michael
but
Neese. He's the new
he was
Pierschbacher to me.
he
Or
was
maybe
he
he's not.
he was the only guy that was activated of the guys who can play center. He was the only other one that was activated outside of like your Jonah and Grahams who are free agents, but Nice was activated a couple of times from a numbers standpoint. I don't think he actually saw the field on offense, though.
So
But
center is basically covered because Frank's coming back, and maybe long term, maybe they'd be looking at drafting a guy who has the ability to slide inside long term. It's not out of the realm. But at guard, the only guards under contract currently, Matt Farniok, Colby Soristal, Netani Muti, and now you're left with free agency Jonah Jackson, Graham Glasgow, Hal Vitai, who's probably good. He might have played his last NFL game. And Kyoto Awashika, who saw plenty of time in the NFC Championship game, who is a restricted free agent, right? Have they
exclusive
offered him
rights.
Exclusive rights. So he's probably coming back.
Yeah, he's probably coming back. So, but again, you're gonna have two backups, but you're looking for starters. Hopefully, they get a deal done with either Graham or Jonah. But if they don't, they're gonna have options. This class is loaded at the top. There's four guys who I think have the potential to go in the first round. If you count, a couple of them have the ability to play tackle. Talese Fuaga and Troy Fautanu, those guard tackle guys. Go ahead.
I was keeping my eye on Fawatanu during the college football playoff championship game. He's the left tackle from Washington. Wasn't the greatest, but they were in a bad situation, you know, as it was. Overmatched.
He's gonna be much better inside. He's got the length to play tackle, and I think some teams will view him as a tackle. He's gonna be much better suited inside, in my opinion. Fuaga is, again, I think he's going to be a tackle on more boards, almost all of them. But he also has that range to kick inside. And so a guy like Fuaga is interesting to me because he's a guy that you can draft. He'll start at right guard. And then if you can't come to terms with Taylor Decker and you move on a year from now, you kick Sewell over, and then Fuaga can kick out the right tackle because he's got a ton of experience at right tackle, like 1,500 snaps at right tackle in college. But he's guard flexible. He can start at either one of them today. Like, that's how good he is. And so, but he's also a guy that's probably going to go in the top 20, maybe top 15. And so you may have to trade up for a guy like him, but he's going to be the kind of top one on my board for the Lions. Fautanu is... I think he made a lot of money. I think his stock is probably going up. He is for sure a first rounder, top half of the, will he go in the top half? I don't know. But I could see him going to the top 20, top 25 again, just out of the Lions' reach potentially. And those are like the guard tackle guys that are in that first round mix.
Fautanu, 11 snaps as a tight end. So there's a Lions right there.
Yeah. If you're talking about guard centers, though, or even like, well, there's a couple guys to start thinking about. Jackson Powers Johnson is probably the guy who makes the most sense because he can start at guard for you right now. He gives you insurance for Frank Ragnow, but he's, you know, he could be maybe your long-term answer at center depending on how Frank's health hangs around. I still think Frank's got several more years, so I'm not overly worried about needing to get a guard or needing to get a center. At the same time, it's okay if you have center range, right? Like if you can play guard but have center range, that's going to be very appealing. Guy like Powers Johnson does. Very interesting, very appealing, very explosive guy, very wide barrel chested. And if he's there at 29, it makes a ton of sense. Graham Barton from Duke played left tackle at Duke also, but a lot of people believe he's going to kick inside to center, maybe even guard. And so Graham Barton is a guy who, again, kind of fits that role where you can play a lot of different positions. Best is probably at center or guard, but has a little bit of tackle range. Another guy that is going to be in that first round range. Interesting enough, Tim 20man of DetroitLions.com, and he did a mock draft this week, and Graham Barton was his pick. So Barton is a guy I think people need to be paying attention to. He did not compete at the combine. So if you watch the combine, and you're like, man, why didn't I notice him? Well, he wasn't competing. That's why he didn't notice him. But the talent is there to go in the first round. After that, maybe you think a guy like Zach Frazier is good enough to go at the end of round one, and so you're going to trade up for him. I think there's, if you listen to Daniel Jeremiah or Dane Brugler, who both have him ranked at 35 and 36 respectively, and then I think PFF has him at 31. A guy like Zach Frazier is also, I think, going to be kind of in that range for the end of the first round. It's got bad grade from Lance Zierlein, which kind of draws his average down a little bit on my board. But I think Zach Frazier's got to keep in mind there as well. After that, though, the options don't stop. You're going to have a ton of options in the second round, like Cooper Beebe, Jordan Morgan, who was another tackle, Kingsley Sumatia, who we talked about before, Penei Sewell's cousin. I thought he athletically showed out extremely well at the combine. And I have a lot more confidence in him taking him in the second round than maybe I did previously. So Christian Haynes, Dominic Pooney, these are all these guys. If they're there in the second round, fantastic. You're getting an instant starter. Dropping into the third round, a guy like Zach Zinter, his injury could push him to the third round, maybe even further. I think he could be a starter if he's healthy. Christian Mahogany is going to be a starter. I think you could get in the third round. Isaiah Adams from Illinois, and Cedric Von Prahn, the Georgia center, he fits the mentality, and I think he could be in consideration for the Lions, but he's got really short arms, under 32 inches. And so I wonder if he's going to be like a center only. And if he's a center only, he's going to fall farther down the Lions board than maybe he will for some other teams who maybe are center needy. So I haven't really pinpointed where Von Prahn is going to be with the Lions. I think he's talent from a talent wise, talent perspective, he's a top 100 guy. Is he center only, or is he, can he play guard? If he can play guard, count him in that range as well. And so look, that's 15, 13, 14 guys right there, right? That I just kind of named off. And
Right.
so any of those guys, you're probably, you draft them. Half of them are instant starters. Half of them are guys that are going to compete and maybe win the starting job of those 14. That's a big, deep pool of players to choose from. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, well, just draft the guard in the third round. You'll get your starting guard in the third round.
Lions
That's
have
not,
done that before, a couple of
that's,
times.
yeah, several, right? It's not as clean, right? Like Christian Mahogany's in my, he's a perfect fit stylistically. I don't think he's plug and play, but I think he could win a starting job, right? You're going to get him in a, you probably get him in the third round. But a guy like Christian Haynes, I think he is plug and play, but you're probably going to have to use a second rounder to get him. And then all the guys ahead of Haynes that I mentioned, Frazier, Beebe, Morgan, those guys, those are all second rounders, maybe even, before the Lions second round pick, but they're all probably plug and play guys. So if you want a plug and play guy that is almost a certainty, you're probably using a first or second rounder. If you are willing to wait till the third and kind of gamble, there's some talent there that could come out of camp with a starting job too.
I'm concerned because you don't have a guy. There's no guy. There's no Darnell Wright. There's no Larry Warford. You don't have a guy.
Well, I
So
think I have a lot of
that's not
guys.
a good sign.
Well, okay, if I have a guy and the
No,
guy that I,
you can't do it. No, doesn't work now.
well, let me hold on. Let
You
me.
were sold on those guys in the past, that you were shouting from the mountaintops on each and every one of those guys. You're not doing that now. Now I'm forced. I'm putting you in the position where, oh, I got to pick a guy now.
No. I can tell you right now, the guy that I think that is the best suited guy is Powers Johnson. But you'd have to spend a first rounder, and he might not even be there. I think that is the most talented fit that you're not maybe that you're probably not going to have to trade up for. Maybe you'd have to trade up for him, but he is an elite prospect. But the guy that I've been pounding the table for, there's two guys on this list that I've been pounding the table for 3 years because I thought they might come out over the last 3 years. And those two guys are Zach Zinter and Cooper Beebe. Cooper Beebe was a guy that was on my radar 3 years ago. And I was like, oh, he'll come out. And then last year, I had him as, I think, a second rounder last year. And I thought he's for sure he'd come out. And when he went back to school, I was like, I couldn't believe it. He's going to be, in my opinion, he's going to be a second rounder. And so who knows? Maybe he's even higher up on the board than I think, but he's a guy that I've watched who's an absolute road grader. His measurables aren't elite, which I think is going to drop him. But his play style, his familiarity with gap blocking schemes, he's a guy that's been on my radar for years. So Cooper's he's very appealing.
Zinter, was his break clean? Like, was there a lot of weird stuff going on with his injury, or
It's
they feel good
clean,
about
but it's multiple bones. And so
that's a problem.
that's what's taking the longevity. That's why his stock is teetering, because like if it was just one bone clean break, it'd be you can recover from that quick. This was a they were both clean, but they were there's both of them, like both his bones broke, and that's a much longer recovery process. I think Zinter, people are sleeping on how good he was before his injury. He would have been in the second round conversation, in my opinion. Now they're talking about him potentially going in the fourth or fifth round because of the injury. And if that happens, he's a steal.
All right, defensive side of the ball. I'm doing interior defensive linemen, defensive tackles.
Can I
Oh,
jump in
sorry.
one quick time?
Yeah,
I
no, I'm sorry
apologize.
to derail you here.
No, I should have mentioned this. If you're looking at the combine board, the key number for interior or any offensive lineman in general, the key number is the short shuttle. Okay. The Lions prefer a short shuttle that's like in the 4.6s. Okay. But there are a handful of guys that went 4.47 and under. The reason I say 4.47 is because there was a study that Josh Norris of Underdog Fantasy did. He used to be with Roto World, but Josh Norris basically like pulled every guy who's ever run a 4.47 or lower and looked at them, and like 90% of them get drafted, 90% of them end up starting someday, and then like three quarters of them have started like 100 games. Like it's an insane metric for offensive line success, and guys that run this almost always end up in these key roles where they play themselves into starting roles. Farniok, the Lions backup, is one of those guys. He was a guy who was he was drafted, but he's a guy with his because of his lateral movement, there's potential for him to find success. Outside of Farniok, Frank Ragnow's 4.51 was the highest on the team. And then like so that kind of shows you what I'm talking about. Like that four, if you're at that like 4.5 range, you're really good. If you're in that 4.47 or lower, that's rare air. And so when you look at this board, and as I fill in pro day numbers and stuff like that, that's the number to keep in mind for your interior offensive line. The highest ranked player that ran a 4.47 or under is Pooney from the Kansas left tackle who would kick in the guard, who I think is probably going to end up being a second rounder. After him, it's almost all day three guys. And so now you're talking about taking guys at value who can, you're looking at scores like lateral movement scores like the short shuttle. And those guys that run at 4.47 or under tend to be, they have a much better chance of being successful in the NFL. All right, that's it.
Good news for the Lions offensively. The two positions that they're in the most need of, there's a bevy of talent at the
Oh, yeah.
draft. So
Oh,
that's
yeah.
a good sign.
Yeah, for
All right,
sure.
now defensive tackles. This is an area of need. They have Aleem McNeil, they have a solid starter, but they could use a guy next to him, they could use
Yeah.
depth, you name it.
Certainly. There's a couple guys at the top of the list for me. Byron Murphy and Jerzon Newton. Murphy was at the combine. Newton was unable to compete at the combine because of a foot injury. And so but those two guys kind of sit at the top of the list. Of the two, Murphy, I think, is probably going to be the higher rated, but Newton is the more balanced prospect, the one that fits in a little bit better with what the Lions do now. And he's also a guy the Lions met with at the combine. And so that's an important thing to take note of. Typically, they draft guys that they meet with. They meet with 45 guys. Typically, they, draft from that pool of guys. Like, there's a reason they pick guys out at the combine to meet with. And Newton was one of those guys. And so, he's got pass rushing talent. He's got run stopping talent, and he's a very balanced guy. Not working out, having a foot injury, maybe that causes him to his stock to drop a little bit. But if he's there at 29, he's very much in play. Murphy, I think, would also be in play at 29. I'm not sure if he's going to be there. I think he's a top 20 prospect because of his pass rush. His pass rush is elite. Typically, those guys go in the top 20 picks. But for Newton, he's not quite as, he's not elite as a pass rusher, but he is balanced across the board. And from a mentality standpoint, he fits in with what the Lions want. So he's a guy I'm definitely keeping my eye on. After him, Braden Fisk from Florida State was the one who showed out the most. He had a unbelievable measurable combine. He had an unbelievable workout skills. He was a guy who was already considered like a top five defensive tackle. And it's very possible, knowing how the league rates defensive tackles, his pass rushing ability could easily jump him over DeVondre Sweat, the big nose tackle out of Texas. I think Sweat's right in that mix, in that top four, and as is Chris Jenkins, who kind of rounds out from Michigan. He, again, another balanced defensive tackle. He'll kind of round the bunch out. All those guys, the Fisk, Sweat, Jenkins, are all round two guys. Duke Arororo from Clemson is raw but talented. And so I think he's going to jump up some boards. He's a guy that I think I could see teams taking. I don't know how, if the Lions would view him as highly as put a second round grade on him, but the talent is there and intriguing enough that I felt he was worth a mention.
Well, anybody deeper? Do you really see the Lions taking a defensive tackle that high in the draft?
It's possible. I don't know though. I'm kind of torn because they've largely ignored defensive tackle in the past. Well, I mean,
They
outside
took
of Roger Martin.
Onsuerike in the second round and
Right. Except for the initial one, right? Except for
the
well, I
initial
say
draft,
that.
the McNeil in the
Yeah.
third round. Yeah, I guess
Yeah.
it's 1 out of 3.
Right. Well, but actually, look, I guess now that you say that, they did take McNeil, they did take Onsuerike, and they did take,
Hutch. I know he's not a defensive tackle, but
no,
they
but
do take
Broderick
defensive
Martin.
linemen high, yeah.
They took Broderick Martin last year. So I guess maybe they haven't ignored it. It just seems like the production just hasn't been heavily
Right,
focused there,
right.
right? Because I do think they took Martin knowing he was a project. So if they don't take one of those guys, it gets a little bit harder to project. Fabian Lovett from Florida State was a guy I tabbed pre-draft as a run stuffer. Mekhi Wingo from LSU was one of the guys I tabbed post combine as a standout. He's massively undersized though. Like, he's barely 6 foot, 285, but he's incredibly fast. Like, he would be a pure interior pass rusher. The problem with that is you kind of lean on Pascal and Kaminsky for that interior pass rush. But at the same time, they're not really getting it done. So maybe you do look at a guy like Wango and say, hey, this is what we're looking for. This is what we got. So maybe Wingo is a guy that they might target. After him, the only other guy I think that like stands out to me is Christian Boyd, who did not go to the combine, but the Lions are bringing him for a top 30 visit. And he's another guy that is kind of balanced in the fact that he can be both an explosive pass rusher and a good run stuffer. But he's coming from a smaller school at Northern Iowa. So again, that would be a late round guy, like a day three guy that they've brought in for a visit that they're interested in. His style fits what they look for. The production fits what they look for. But you wouldn't have seen him at the combine because he wasn't an invite.
All right. Let's go over to the edge defender position, which, anchored, of course, by Aiden Hutchinson. But on the other end, they'd be looking to improve. You mentioned Josh Pascal. You mentioned John Kaminsky. Those guys are both coming back. But Romeo Okwara's gone. Charles Harris gone. James Houston still coming off of injury. They brought in the Canadian Football Leaguer, Matthew Betts, who led the Canadian Football League in sacks. They have Mitchell Agudé. Who might the Lions be looking at here? Who's at the top? All those kind of
Yeah,
things.
edge is always tricky because you always should be looking to upgrade your edge, always. So it's very possible that they're saying, hey, we need to upgrade our edge. Let's look at an edge tackle at 29 and or an edge rusher at 29 and just grab the best one because we need to upgrade. If they decide to stay with the same system, though, the really big, only big need for them is a backup to Aiden. So you need a guy who can play hand in the dirt or stand up and runs with a high motor like Romeo did. So from a need standpoint, you're looking at a edge, more of a reserve type of guy, whereas the upgrade option is always there. So you have to take almost everyone into consideration. Then you add in the fact that there's some Sam linebackers in this thing as well, and how they were looking for a Sam linebacker quite a bit, that opens up a few more options as well. So there's really a lot of guys to pay attention to. And it starts at the top, like I said, in the first round. A guy like Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Latu from UCLA, like those three guys are widely considered first round picks. They're also all expected to probably be off the board by the time the Lions are on the clock. So if we look past those guys, though, there's two real candidates that fit with what the Lions do, and from a scheme standpoint, but also are productive or high upside guys. The first one's Chop Robinson from Penn State, elite athlete. We all knew that. We knew he would be an elite athlete. He tested as an elite athlete. And so he checked all the boxes that you expect. If the Lions want to get an elite pass rusher or potential pass rusher opposite Aiden, he's the guy. If you want to stick with what you've been doing with your more of an edge setter with some pass rushing upside, but then can also kick inside on third downs, then you're looking at Darius Robinson, who is going to, be in that same kind of tier as Chop. And so both those guys are going to be in play at pick 29 for me. Darius, if you look at his testing numbers, you're going to be less than impressed. You're going to see a lot of red and you're going to say, man, why would the Lions be interested in him? And then you're going to look at the fact that he's like 30 pounds heavier and a couple inches taller than every other guy he was competing against, because he used to be a defensive tackle who just happens to find a lot of success out on the edge. You can utilize him in a lot of ways that, like, the Chiefs utilize Chris Jones, where you can play him inside and then kick him outside, in certain situations. There's a lot of options with Darius Robinson that fits with what they've done in the past. Whereas Chop is more of just like an athlete upgrade that you're going to put on the opposite side. It's more of a pure pass rusher with an unlimited ceiling, because who knows what happens when things start clicking together for him, because athletically the ceiling is way up there. It's like he's not going to be the other, oh God, what's the Penn State kid, the kid in Dallas, the defensive player of the league of the year.
Parsons.
Yes. He's
Micah
not going to
Parsons.
be Micah Parsons, who also played at Penn State, but he plays in the Micah Parsons type role, and athletically he's close to Parsons level, but he's not Parsons. Like, and people are going to, some people will make that comparison. They'll be like, oh, he played at Penn State. Oh, he's super athletic. Oh, he's got elite pass rushing skill. He's not Micah Parsons.
He's more
Okay.
LeVar Arrington than Micah Parsons.
But the athleticism is real, and that's why the comparisons are out there because he has it's legitimate. Like he's 6'3", 254 pounds. He runs a 4.48. He jumps, out the building, and his burst rate is near the top of the class. Like he's highly talented, but he's won his whole career on being talented, and his skills are not, fine-tuned. You fine-tune his skills and he reaches that potential, who knows? He could be one of the better pass rushers in the league. But there's work to do. Whereas a guy like Darius Robinson, you're going to plug him in. You're getting a better version of what you already have with more passing rushing upside and Chris Jones type range. And that's what makes him very appealing. So both those guys, again, are going to be in consideration for me at pick 29 because of their skill sets and the upside. If you get past them, go ahead. Were you going to say something? I cut
Yeah,
you
well, I
off.
was going to ask, well, what happens if I don't see them taking a defensive end at the end of the first round? Like, where do we go from here? It would be more likely they're going to take one later.
If they take one in the second, Marshawn Nyland is the top guy on my board. Western Michigan guy, basically kind of like Darius Robinson, but he's smaller. But he also a little bit quicker. He has that inside outside flexibility. He's a good edge setter, and he's got some range. We talked about the short shuttle for off on the interior offensive line needy. If it's below 4.47, how that's really good. Well, his short shuttle's 4.18. Like he's very good. He's very good moving laterally. Like he's one of the, I think he that his was actually the top of the short shuttles at the amongst the linemen at the combine. Like he's highly talented, and but he's raw, smaller school, or he's a little bit raw in his game still because that's why he's there in the second round. But the talent's there, the upside's there, and you can see him panning out and being worth it in that second round. If you look at a guy like Chris Braswell from Alabama, he's going to fit in with your edge. He's going to be a guy who maybe he doesn't last until the end of the second round, but if he does, he's your answer at Sam. He's going to give you a lot of options on the edge that you don't have now that you were asking Jack Campbell and Derek Barnes to do last year. Chris Braswell solves that problem for you. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be in an official starting role, but it allows your off the ball guys to be off the ball guys and you're going to have a guy who can drop into coverage occasionally, but also is that kind of pure Sam that you've been looking for. And so that's going to appeal a lot to the Lions. Adisa Isaac from Penn State is the opposite Chop Robinson guy. He had a bad combine. Kind of stocks down on him. We'll see where it goes. But he's another guy that I think is talented enough, flexible enough that you could keep him down, stand him up. I just don't know if he's like ready to start right off the bat type of thing. And I think you're going to start to see that with from this point on the board is I don't know how many of these guys are going to start. It might be five starting edge guys that are for sure starters. After that, like Nealon, Braswell, Isaac, these are going to be more role player guys who play a ton of snaps, but aren't necessarily starters. Braylon Trice kind of fits into that role as well. The Washington edge, high motor, high production, gets a ton of pressures, plays a ton of snaps. He's basically Aiden Hutchinson light from that standpoint. Awful combine. He was bad in drills. He was bad testing. He was also injured, and he did all of it through injury. Like so, you could tell he was favoring a leg. You could tell he was injured, but he also was like kind of muscling through because he wanted to do everything. He wanted to show that he could fight through it. But his stock could take a hit because if his performance was not good. So if he's there, I could see them saying, hey, let's take him. We're going to put him right behind Aiden, let him learn under Aiden. And we'll use him on the opposite side on third downs when we kick Kaminsky or Pascal inside. We'll throw Trice on the other side, Trice opposite Aiden with the other edge inside, and you've got something to work with. And you could get him in the second, and if he drops, maybe third round. And I think there'd be value to him in doing that. So those are the day like kind of day two guys that stand out to me. When you get into day three, I said there's a couple of Sam guys that I like. There's a couple of lower profile, low production guys that really tested well that I think are worth considering. Javon Solomon from Troy is, I think, another Sam linebacker option. Jalen Harrell from Michigan is going to be another Sam type option. Miles Cole was tested extraordinarily well. He's a more down defensive end. You can add more of a job, the Pascal Kaminski type. That's where he's going to fit in. He's like 6'6", almost 280, but he, you know, had terrific on-field testing, terrific measurables. He really caught my eye. Those kind of later round guys on day three, again, you're more role players, but there's talent there as well. There's just not, this class is it's not void of talent by any means, but you know, it doesn't have that elite talent at the top. And then it feels like there's a little bit, it's a little bit lighter in the middle this year, but there's some good guys on day two that you can find, and even a couple guys late.
All right. Off the ball linebackers. Once again, this is not an area of need for the team. Currently under contract, Derek Barnes, Alex Anzalone, Jack Campbell, Malcolm Rodriguez, Jalen Reeves-Maybin. Anthony Pittman is out there as a, he's a free agent, right? They didn't offer him a
Not
RFA
yet.
deal or not
Not to
yet.
my, they're trying. They're
Okay.
trying to get a deal done with him right now. I know that.
If they get the deal done with him, it's very unlikely they're going to draft, they be looking at a linebacker at all, but let's hit on a
Correct.
couple.
Correct. So when Bob Quinn was the general
General
manager,
manager.
I invented that QIB system,
The
right?
quib. Yep.
Very easy to identify what he was trying to do and the skills that he looked for. We figured it out within a year, what he was targeting. We're now 3 years into Brad Holmes, and we're really not close to figuring out his system or exactly what he values, because he values so many other factors other than just athleticism. So it's harder to fit. But linebacker is a group where we have enough data to say, hey, there are some trends amongst the linebackers that he drafts and brings in that kind of should pique your interest. And so in my mind, there's one guy in this class that kind of checks all the boxes from an athletic standpoint. Ironically, he was also a guy that I targeted in my pre-combine draft or my pre-combine list because I liked his tape. So this is a guy who appears to have the mentality that the team wants. His game tape did enough to catch my eye. And from a measurable standpoint, he passes the categories that all the other linebackers that Brad Holmes has targeted pass. That guy is Trevon Wallace of Kentucky. All right. He is a day three linebacker who is going to be a core special teamer immediately. He has Mike Sam range, just like Anthony Pittman, and he's got good speed, good explosion, a very high athlete, and he's going to be a guy you can develop on defense and play immediately on special teams. And so Trevon Wallace is that guy. If they don't sign Pittman, this is the guy I think they might draft. And if they do draft him, I'll know I'm onto something. But again, maybe someone else drafts him before the Lions have the chance, or maybe the Lions, you know, go a different direction. You know, I'm really not going to figure this out. But if they draft him, I will know that I'm onto something, because he checks a lot of the boxes that the Lions are looking for. So Trevon Wallace from Kentucky, I'm planting my flag on him right now, knowing that the top five linebackers are already back on the roster and they may not even draft the guy at all.
It does make sense that if the Lions are going to target anybody, it's going to be a guy who can at least play Mike linebacker. So what happened in the NFC Championship game when Derek Barnes got hurt, when things started kind of unraveling on defense, Anzalone had to move back over to the Mike position, and or did he move back?
No,
Whatever.
they kept him at Will. They had to use Malcolm. They had to move
Yeah, they used
Malcolm
Malcolm
from Will.
Rodriguez. And that's when things started getting rough. And that's when it started seeing that, hey, Alex Anzalone's not getting to the plays because he's trying to do too much, just like what we used to see in the past with this defense, and
Correct.
that Barnes really solidified. So if there would be a guy, they need that, that would be like the one gap, on in the linebacker core. But it could be also made up with the further development of Jack Campbell,
Yeah, I
so.
think with in that championship game, they got kind of stuck where they were like, we need to, we're using Campbell at that Sam, and if they draft a Sam, then maybe they don't run into that problem next year. You know what I mean? If they draft more depth this way, that also helps them as well. But Wallace is the guy who checks the boxes pretty much across the board for me. And he's a guy from an athletic standpoint that I'm going to say, wow, he makes it work. Now there's a couple other guys that athletically check the boxes as well. Most of them are kind of going earlier though, right? I think there's three linebackers that might go in the first couple of rounds. Edgerrin Cooper, Junior Colston, Peyton Wilson, those seem to be the guys that most people are like, hey, they're probably in the top 60. After that, and maybe not, they might slide too, because I don't think this class is strong. After that, it's kind of wide open, right? Cedric Gray is a guy a lot of people think will go on day two. Jeremiah Trotter from Clemson has upside. Eichenberg is more of your throwback linebacker that we saw at Ohio State. Those guys have the chance, I think, to go on day two. But we'll see. It's not, again, you're starting to see fewer and fewer off the ball linebackers because your edge guys are getting more athletic. Your defenses are spending more time in nickel, and you're just seeing the position of this position off the ball of getting narrower and narrower and narrower. And so Lions may not address this position at all because of what they have. But again, if they do, I'm gonna plant my flag on Trevin Wallace and roll the dice, see where it goes.
All right. Cornerback, the biggest area of need, although one could argue it's really offensive guard. Lions have big gaps under contract currently. Cam Sutton, Stephen Gilmore, Emmanuel Mosley, who that's a total wild card with his injury.
Injuries. Yep.
Craig James and Brian Branch. So there's plenty of room to add players.
Yeah, and I expect them to fill a lot of those holes in free agency, but even if they fill some of those holes in free agency, they're still going to need to draft for depth. This week has kind of it's very interesting to see how the post combine reactions have played out. In previous weeks leading up to the combine, most draft analysts were saying like at like 66% or something like that. People were saying Lions are going to draft a corner. 66% of mock drafts were projecting the Lions to take a corner. Post combine, it's down to it was down to 40. Only 40% of the ones I looked at this week had a corner. Now that's still high, but it was a lot less than 60 plus, right? Additionally, the field had been kind of narrowed into like a four guy gap of like these four corners are probably going to be the ones that fit into the range with the Lions. Now post game, now or I'm sorry, post combine, you've got like seven guys now. So like everything has kind of like been thrown up into the air. With the cornerbacks group, there's people that are down on Arnold from Alabama because they didn't like how he ran or they didn't like what he did. I think he's probably still at the top of the class. Quinyon Mitchell played out of his mind at the combine. He tested out of his mind. He did terrific on field drills. He might jump up to cornerback one if Arnold is indeed he slipped a tick. Both those guys I expect to be off the board by the time the Lions are picking. So unless the Lions trade up, I'm expecting both those guys to be gone. But who knows, right? Like it's kind of all up in the air at this point right now. A guy like Ennis Rakestraw, who was everybody was kind of high on going in because of his run support, he ran a 4.51. And now the fan base seems to be put off of him based on that 4.51 because they're like, oh, he's slow. You
He's
don't want a
another Tease
slow core.
Tabor.
Right. That's the comparison we're seeing. We're seeing people say, oh, you can't draft a guy who runs 4.51. Folks, Brian Branch ran a 4.58. Okay. Like we've been the GPS speed in getting, 40 time are not the same, right? We've talked about this. Rakestraw fits into that category. Plus, he looks like a 4.5 guy on tape. So he finished right about where we wanted. Plus, he was dealing with an injury issue at the combine as well. So I'm not surprised he ran in the 4.5s. Nothing changed for me with Rakestraw as far as his workout goes. And there's so many people that have soured on him. But for me, I'm like, eh, it's kind of what I was thinking would happen. Cooper DeJean didn't participate because of a fibula. Kool-Aid McKinstry, they discovered a foot injury at the combine medical, so they had to pull him out. Both those guys are in the mix for me. Nate Wiggins ran a 4.28. Problem with Nate Wiggins is he's 6'1 and a half, 173 pounds. He is rail thin. Like that's like JMO size, right? Is JMO coming up to do run support? You know what I mean? Like you're not going to get run support out of Nate Wiggins. You're going to get a guy who can fly down the field and can run and can cover. That's great if that's what they want. But if they want a guy who can put up, compete and run support, which is exactly what the Lions defensive backs coach said at the combine, that they want someone who can play in run support. Wiggins probably isn't going to be on that list. Or he's going to be lower on the list for the Lions than he is for other teams who maybe want more of a pure cover corner. Last one's Kamari Lassiter. Kamari Lassiter has kind of like been the low man in this group. He didn't run at the combine. So we don't have a straight line speed on him, but he did participate in the agility drills and he knocked the agility drills out the park. His 6.623 cone is exceptional. It would be the fastest one that the Lions have. Right now, most of the time you're trying to get like under 6.9, or if you're under 7, you're good. If you're under 6.9, you're right where the most NFL teams want you. To run a 6.62, it's very impressive. It means he has good lateral agility. The thing with Lassiter for me is that he looks more like a zone cover corner than a man corner. And because of that, I don't know what style defense the Lions are going to run. If they want to go back to zone like they did at the beginning of the year, yeah, he'd be great. He'd be a great option at 29. If they shift more to man, I don't know if Kamari's going to be as high on their board because I see him more as a zone guy. Can he play man? Yeah, but Georgia ran more zone, so that's what you see more out of him is that zone based. At the same time, the agility drills say he has the potential to play man. So he's an interesting guy that I'm still trying to work my way in, but all seven of those guys could be in play at 29. And so with the Lions having a big need at corner, even if they draft guys in free agency, I still think those seven guys are all going to get consideration as being in play for the Lions. And they're all kind of unique and different in their own way. And it'll just be a matter of which style of player are the Lions looking for if they want to take a guy in the first round?
Wow, that's great. I don't think they're going to take one in the first round because of Brad Holmes' style of GM, right? Like every team needs defensive backs, basically. Yeah, I'm sure there's a couple that don't. So a lot of these guys get overdrafted, and what Holmes doesn't like to do is overdrafting a player. He'll usually take the best player available, regardless of position, as many folks got upset at last year. But look how great it worked out. So I think it's really unlikely that they're going to take any one of these guys early,
Well,
unless they really love one of them.
I tell you what, the rumors at the combine support what you're saying, Joe, because the rumors at the combine are that Detroit is heavily in the free agency market looking for a veteran corner. And if you look at Brad Holmes' history of how his, like when he was with the Rams, they used free agency to get their corners. They traded for their top corners. They would draft and develop corners, but they would use free agency to get their starters. And so, and look at what Brad has done so far. The only corner he's drafted is now playing safety, right? So like, right. If you look at what Brad's done over the last 3 years and you look at what, where, you know, his history of approach and what the rumors are at the combine, it sure looks like he's going to draft a corner to develop, not in the first round necessarily, and then hit free agency hard trying to find a veteran starter. Even if they get a veteran starter, I still think it's good business to take a corner high. And it, and there are options on day two that I think the Lions need to consider. TJ Tampa is probably one of the top ones that'll be there in round two. That
who should be forced to be drafted by the Buccaneers?
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
The next guy on my list is one that absolutely does
your favorite
does
guy.
Not, it does not have a role. He does not have a role on this roster, and that's Mike Sanders. Still, there's no role. There's no clear role for him, but he's a football player. And the Lions draft football players. And so in my mind, he's still in consideration. If the Lions didn't approach last year by just, if they didn't take Jack Campbell last year, the Jack Campbell pick has completely flipped my thought process on the Lions. And now in the past, I would have said, no, they're not going to take Mike Sanders still because they have Brian Branch that plays nickel. I don't know if Mike can play on the outside. After taking Jack Campbell, Brad Holmes has said, I'm taking football players. We're going to let Dan Campbell figure out where they go. Mike Sanders still is a football player. If he was 6 foot instead of 5'9" and a half, he would be in my conversation for the first round because he's that talented. I love him. One of my favorite players in this draft class, not just at corner, in the whole class. I think his ceiling is unlimited. I think he's a day one starting nickel. And that's probably where someone's going to value him and they're going to take him. And they're going to take him. He's going to start a nickel. He's going to play for 10 years in the NFL.
Los Angeles Chargers.
Or the Rams. I can see the Rams taking him too. But he's a football player. And because he's a football player and because he's talented, I can't take him off my board. I'm going to rank him how I would normally rank him because Brad Holmes has shown me it does not matter. I'm taking football players. And so Mike's a football player and Mike's a second rounder for me. And he's going to be next. He's going to be right there at the top for me and on day two. He's a guy I absolutely love. I like Mike Sandersill as much as I liked Brian Branch last year. If that gives you some perspective on how much I like Mike Sandersill.
Anybody late?
Well, you know, I think there's some other guys that you can find in a third round, Max Melton, Kyrie Jackson, Cam Hart has got the size that you're looking for. So does Jackson for that matter. But then they get into a lot of nickels. It's kind of like receivers, right? Where your bigger guys are going earlier. Your slot guys tend to fill up those middle rounds a little bit more. We're seeing the same approach to receiver you're seeing at corner as well. So you're seeing a lot of really good nickels go off the board at this point. When you get like into day three, Pritchett from Auburn, I thought had a good combine. Ran sub 4.4. He's 6 foot, 190. He's a good player. He's a guy that I'm going to go back and look at a little bit more. He's a guy if you could find him on day three and be happy with him, right? Like at receiver, there's a lot of guys that are like, I'm like, wow, I like this guy, but he's a nickel. You know, I like this guy, but I don't see them. I could see them taking a nickel on day two because he's this talented football player. I don't know if I could see them taking a nickel on day three for a guy who's just going to be a backup unless he's going to also be like an immediate starter on special teams, right? So it gets a lot harder to pinpoint the guys, you know, that stand out. I think Pritchett's probably the name that I put the most little check marks next to when I was taking my notes. Jerry Jones, he's a nickel though. And yeah, that's it. Like I haven't,
I don't know. Maybe they go nickel. Maybe they build depth at nickel. Like you said, they don't outside corner. They're going to go sign guys in free agency or doing something crazy, trade a pick.
Sure. And there's options. There's options at nickel, especially on day three. And so I've spent a lot of time studying the top 15, 20 guys at corner, but there's another 20, 30 guys below them that I am still learning about. And from a combine standpoint, Pritchett was the only one that jumped out at me. I can tell you there was a guy who didn't work out at the combine who was on my short list who I didn't talk about previously. It's Haddon from Tennessee, local kid. I believe he played like at River Rouge or something like that. He's a guy, 6'1", close to 200, got some man cover skills. He's a guy that's on my radar. He didn't participate at the combine though, because he had a shoulder injury.
All right. Yeah. Haddon went to River Rouge High School. That's a good call.
Thank you.
All right. Safeties. Once again, Lions have just only three guys under contract. Kirby Joseph, Ify Malafonu, who will be the start. Well, in all likelihood, will be the starters. Mm-hmm. Brandon Joseph, a little bit deeper. Tracy Walker has been released. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who know, some people want to have him back. I'm more in the camp of that. They can let him go do something else. I don't know if they're going to look to be drafting somebody or if they're going to maybe add a veteran guy in free agency to be part of the rotation.
It's tricky, right? Because you need a veteran because you have two guys that are both on their rookie contracts, second and third years in the league. So you'd like to have a veteran in the room. And there has been a bloodbath of cuts at safety. Right? Oh my goodness.
A lot of high end or traditionally high end ones who might be on the downside of their careers.
So I think a safety who doesn't get picked up in that first wave and watches the prices drop makes a ton of sense to bring in to the safety room. If they do look to the draft to add a little bit more youth, there's options there as well. I think Tyler Newbin kind of solidified himself as a safety one for me. Kinchins from Miami was up in the conversation for that. He had a tough combine. He dropped. But I think Kinchins has some starter potential. And with a bad combine, if his stock falls and he gets into draftable range, again, like a guy that you can draft and develop, Kinchins makes a lot of sense. He's comfortable in split zone. He can play high. He can drop in a box. He can be run support. He can be a special teams guy right off the bat. If he slides into like the end of round three, it's okay. It's okay to take a defensive back and turn and give him the Ify Malafonu treatment and let him develop for a year or two and turn into something. Cause I think he has that starter potential. I really like Bullard from Georgia. He's more Brian Branch though, but I think he has some high level safe, like some, he can play as in either one of the high spots, two high, single high. He can do both. Caden Bullock from USC. He's a day two guy. It'll be interesting to see if he slides down into that third round. If he does, I think he's a guy you could develop into a starter. Interesting note on him was that he's 6'2" and he ran a 4.48, and his cover skills are at the level where they were saying some teams may consider shifting him to corner and let him play outside corner because he's got speed, cover skills, and size. And that, so if the Lions think he's in that range where he could be a outside corner plus a safety, like that's a very interesting character. And if that's true, I bet the stock on him is much higher than what the general stock is. Like he could be in the second round conversation instead of the third. One of my favorites is Cole Bishop from Utah, third, fourth round range guy. Split zone, played a lot in a box at Utah, but he's got that split zone familiarity. I think he has some range. He's got some good size to him, ran well. And so, again, a guy, if you took him in the third round, I think he has starter potential a year or two from now. His running mate, Sione Vaki, man, he looked great. He looked great. His runs are about what you expected. They're like in the four, it was thinking we're in a 4.6, 4.6, two. Yeah. We got good explosion. Remember, he's the guy we talked about ahead of the combine that played some running back at Utah because of their injuries.
Right. Yeah.
I believe they compared him to Josh Metellus on the combine. If you remember what Metellus did for the Vikings last year, the Vikings played him at basically almost every single defensive spot they could. They played him at both safety spots, in the nickel, at linebacker, even lined him up as an edge rusher. He had like 30 pressures on the season, Metellus did. And Vaki kind of fits into that role where you can use him in a lot of different situations. You can use him in the box. You can drop him. He just doesn't have speed. And because, or that like straight line speed, yeah, it does have a lot of explosion though. And so, again, Utah runs that split zone, so he's going to be familiar with it. And in my opinion, he's going on day three. I don't know if he could sneak into day two. I guess it's possible, especially with some range and his. I mean, if you want to talk about guys having, some dog in them, this guy has a ton of it. Like he is loaded with it, and so
Well, that
he's
fits
very appealing.
the Holmes MO, right? The guys who love football and who
Yep.
are there to play.
Yep, certainly. The only other guy that stood out for me at the safety group was Tyler Owens. He played at Texas Tech. Very good explosion drills. 6'2½, 216. He's a guy that you could look at and say, hey, he might be a linebacker. If I put a little like 10, 15 more pounds on him, he could be linebacker six for us. Instant special teamer. Right now he's got some safety range to him, but he's an interesting guy who stood out. Injured himself in the first 40, so we never got a 40 time for him. But he did, like I said, he did the other drills and performed well. But he's a guy who caught my attention because of those explosion numbers. It was a guy that was on my radar before, like I said, because of that. He's right on that tweener range where you could maybe turn him into the next Malcolm Rodriguez type of thing, where you could add a little weight to him and then put him at linebacker, and he could be that instant special teamer linebacker hybrid safety guy.
All right. That'll be it for the safety group. I don't think you want to talk about any of the special teamers. There's nothing that's
Well, they
really
didn't
happened
really
on
do
that front.
anything, right?
Right.
None of them ran. We don't get
Always
any of
fun to
those
see
drills.
when they do the bench press. We'd like to get a kicker doing the bench
Right, they've
press.
done it in the past, but
They have,
occasionally
because there
you
was a
get
couple
one,
of real
right?
strong ones, right? There's a couple of
Right.
ones who did real well, who had outscored, linebackers or whatever.
Right. But yeah, I don't think you get that. We didn't get any of that this year. Not that I saw anyway. So again, I haven't put a whole lot of thought into it because I don't know how much they value a kicker and if
Right,
they
they
think one's
don't. They want to go
worthy.
for it.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So that's about it. I think we wrapped up the combine pretty good. You want to touch on free agency real quick before we
Yeah, we can.
just do you have a guy or a position that you're like, man, I really hope they spend some money here. Are you hoping like they retain, like do you hope they pony up to keep Jonah? Do you hope that they go out and say, hey, we got to get a corner? Like, is there any position or even a particular guy?
I read something somewhere that Jonah Jackson would be signing for $7 million a year. That seemed low.
Oh, that's no, that's that seems
Okay,
that
so
seems.
that was balderdash that I
I
was
don't
reading
believe.
there.
I
Okay.
don't believe that. If he
If that
was
was
willing to
true, they
sign
probably would already had him re-signed by now.
100%.
He'd have a 4-year deal.
Yes,
Yeah.
100%. Yes, the reason he's not signed yet is because right now the market is like set at like 16 million per for these guards. And he's going to be one of the top ones. And I was talking about, hey, if his cost is 11 or 12, he's worth it. But if the market's 16, that could be why the Lions are have not reached agreement with him.
Is Graham Glasgow a 1-year or 2-year guy?
I think they will give him, typically what they do to reward guys that do well for them is they give them a 2-year contract. Okay. So He'll get a 2-year contract. The first year will basically be all guaranteed. Some of that guarantee will spill over into year two just to give him some security to at least, to compete. But my guess is he gets a 2-year deal with a little bit of a kick in raise from what he had last time. But again, it's going to be a backloaded deal with most of the guarantees up front.
Right. And now, in my perspective, where the Lions need to be spending money on is the defensive side of the ball. That cornerback, that not necessarily a defensive end, but another guy who can rush the passer. That, in my mindset, right, is that the Lions have a top five offense. I don't know what it ended up being. Was it fourth? Was it third? Was it
It was
fifth?
there. Yeah, it was in there, in that range.
And they need to hold to that. You know, and I could like so invest on offense in the draft because it seems that, that between offensive tackle, offensive guard, wide receiver, they'll be able to get high quality guys in the draft in those first four picks, at least three of those first four picks. Keep investing to the offense like that because, the Lions made the NFC Championship game with the top five offense and then what, the 23rd best defense, right? What they don't want to do is like, you don't want to go to be like, well, we need to improve that defense. So to get that defense up to 16, we got to sacrifice that offense and go down to 8 or
Right.
whatever, right?
Right.
But if
You
they
don't want to
have
do
the
that.
eighth bet, you don't want to do that because
Right.
like now you're just kind of like everybody else, like, yeah, they're a pretty good offense. Yeah, they got a halfway decent defense. Those
Right.
teams don't win championships.
I'm
Like
with you.
they need to, and so if people are listening, you're going, it's like, well, then why would they draft anybody? Do you think they'd spend the money on offense? It's like, okay, well, that's a fair point. But either way, like the major investment for the team needs to be on the offense. Whereas I could see just throwing money at some defensive players just to bolster it. Remember when the Jaguars lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game a few years back? It's because they spent, it's a bad example because like they went downhill shortly after that, but they spent a ton of money on the defensive side of the ball. And that's how they improved the defense. They didn't like they hurt them, it's all I'm saying is they need to keep developing that offense to keep it at the top of the pile
Right.
and then just fill gaps on defense. Try to improve the defense by throwing parts at it because that's how the Lions feel they're going to win. Now, that's the opposite of what ended up with the Chiefs is they gave Patrick, but he's Patrick Mahomes. He's going to make guys better on offense. You can,
Right.
they've learned after getting, losing Tyreek Hill is like, we don't have to have the greatest offense around, but we have Patrick Mahomes. He's going to make it happen with whoever he's got. So we
Right.
can develop that defense and we can have this top-notch team. And that's how we're going to win Super Bowls. Whereas I think the Lions can't be in that boat. They need to have like this high caliber offense. And if they're ever going to get there, that's the way they're going to do it. And then just improve the defense enough to win game. Like, I know there's going to be people shouting, well, defense wins championships. Like, and traditionally that is true, but that's not necessarily what happens anymore.
It's not so much true anymore,
Right.
right? Yeah,
So
what's true now
it's got to be
is
good enough.
right. Gotta have a good enough defense and an elite offense.
Right. Or an elite player on offense that can do it by himself, like between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, have that elite player on offense that leads you there.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're talking about spending the majority of their free agency money on defense,
Correct.
but not
And one
necessarily
offensive
like.
guard.
Right. But not necessarily like throwing the boat at Chris Jones
He's going to stay in Kansas City.
or let's say Daniel Hunter, right? It like are
I
you
wouldn't be against it if they did it.
okay. No, I wouldn't be against it as a Hunter's just terrific. But are you saying, hey, throw 20 $1 million at Hunter and see if you can land them. I don't know if that's within their style, right? Like they've already
Right.
said that they're not planning on taking that approach, right? They've already said we're not going to try and land necessarily like the elite guys, but we're going to try and fill the roster out with guys that fit what we do. So if you're not looking at like the top guys, you're kind of looking at like a step down or two. You want to talk about like D line or corner first? Because
Go
I
corner. Corner is the most going to be the most important.
okay. So at corner, I think there are some interesting options that are not going to be at the signed at the top. Well, let me put a pin in that for a second. Jalen Johnson and Sneed,
Well,
Le'Jarius Sneed, both got tagged.
Right. And but didn't Johnson sign a 4-year contract though after he's gone gone?
Correct. He's gone, gone. But Snead is still a trade option.
Seemingly available. I'd do it.
Okay, and I'm against it.
All right.
So that's what I was wondering, was like if you have to trade a second to get him,
I'd do it.
would you be willing? See, like, that's the thing
It's
is,
fine that you don't. I'm not going to say that you're wrong and be like, oh, that's
no.
insane. I can understand your side of the fence too, but I would do it.
So here's the rub for me, and this is, I think, just my stupid way of looking at it. And to get Snead, you're going to have to trade for him, and then you're going to have to pay him. And so, in my mind, you're almost paying twice, because you're paying to get him, you're paying to pay him.
Right.
But I guess that's how every trade
That's
works,
how it
right?
works. Yeah.
Right. And like, that's what I don't, but like, and I'm looking at it like, oh, he's a free agent. I shouldn't have to trade for him to pay him. I should just have to pay him. But that's not how this works. And so my worry with Snead being a franchise tag is that he's going to say, I'm only going to take X number of dollars if you trade for me, because I'm already making X number of dollars as a franchise player, and so I expect to make that much money per year. And so my worry is that his cost is going to be way too high, and then adding a top 100 pick on top of that, it's just too much for me. I know there's a lot of people that want to do it. I feel like you're double paying, and which I don't want to do. I don't want to give away. With seeing what Brad Holmes does with top 100 picks, I don't want to give any top 100 picks away. So, but I totally get it. I totally get the need to wanting to get him. But I'm against it. I don't know if you want to convince me otherwise, or if you want to go to a different guy. But
I think you kind of have this mindset here, which is fine because a lot of people argue against this mindset, but I get why it works too. What Holmes is doing, right, or at least his plan is he's trying to build a model of sustainability that the Lions are always going to be good. Like they're going to build this team, so it's always good. So you don't want to over leverage yourselves in these moves where you're giving up this high value second round pick and you're giving all this money just to one guy because that's a big investment for this one guy and it may not work out
I'm
perfectly
with
well.
you. Right.
Now, so he kind of wants to be in the vein of how Green Bay or Pittsburgh or Baltimore, how they do things. And although those three teams have been excellent, not excellent, but they've at least been in the mix for the last 25 years in this quote unquote modern age of football. I used to, the era of when we were younger, when the 90s would be the modern age of football, but there was still a lot of interceptions thrown and it was still a runner's game. Like I think in this century has been more what should maybe this is the postmodern age, I don't know. So those three teams have been good for the whole postmodern age of football. And Green Bay's won one Super Bowl in that time. Baltimore's won two Super Bowls. Pittsburgh's won two Super Bowls. So to me, there's a lot of credence to doing it that way. It's like it may take a long time, but you'll eventually get there. And it might only be once. And it might, but you're going to be sustainably good. Whereas a lot of people are like, well, go for broke to win the one. And who cares what happens after the fact? As long as you won one, you won one. And I get that too, especially us as Lions fans. We're so starved of success, but
Sure.
they're going to pay the price after the fact, And so that's why I understand why you'd be against the Snead move, because the Snead move would be more of the column B type move to where it's like, okay, they have this roster that's good enough to make the Super Bowl. Let's go for broke for one or two moves that are going to screw things up 2 years from now. But the odds of them winning the Super Bowl are going to tick even higher than if they just stayed the course. So it's, I
All
don't
right.
think either way of thinking is wrong. It's six of one, half dozen of the other. Either way, it might not work out. Either way, it might work out. Maybe Holmes could build something where, we're going to get, annoyed, but 8 years from now, they win the Super Bowl and they're 10 and 7 and 12 and 5 and 9 and 8, like every year. And then maybe in the other track, maybe they win the Super Bowl next year, they go 13 and 4, and then 2 years from now, they're 5 and 12 again. And I don't know, I guess I'd be pleased either way as long as they eventually win and I'm alive to see it. It'd be great. But I get both. I don't think I don't know what's wrong. You know, I don't know which way is wrong. The only teams that have won multiple times and become this truly dominant force have the two greatest quarterbacks in the last 25 years. New England wins six Super Bowls because they have not only because they have Tom Brady, but like they can win so many times because they have Tom Brady and then Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs. That's what does it. You know, that but those guys will put them in unless and the Lions don't have that. You know, they Jared Goff's a good quarterback. He's not one of those two guys. And most teams don't have that, you know.
All right, let's try some rapid fire.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to use PFF's projected top cornerbacks and their projected salaries.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the guy and the salary. You just tell me yes or no,
All right.
and let's see. All right, so after your top two, the next guy on the list is Kendall Fuller. 3 years, 13.3 per. Yes or no? Interested in him or yes or no?
Age, give me age too. Do you have that?
29.
No,
29.
no.
Okay. I'm also a no. Chidobe Awuzie, 2 years, 10.5 per. He's just under 29.
That feels like the Cam Sutton deal.
That's
So then I'm a no.
I'm a
But I guess if
yes.
you have three Cam Suttons, you know, like if they had
Right.
him and then another one, that might not be so bad, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, I'm a yes on him. I'm
All right,
interested in
I'll
him.
stay no, even though I can argue yes.
Stephen Gilmore, 1 year, 10 million. He's 33 and a half.
No.
I'm okay with him if you draft the one high.
Okay,
If you
I
draft a guy
understand
high,
that.
I'm okay with him. Steven Nelson, 2 years, 7.25. He's 31.
No.
Ooh, all right.
You're a yes still?
I'm a yes on him too.
All right.
Kenny Moore, 2 years, 6.75 each. He's
I think,
30.
yeah, we're gonna keep getting. Yeah, I'm a no. Okay, I guess I'm
Yeah,
gonna have to say yes to some of those earlier ones.
I'm a no for him too. I'm a no for him mostly because I think he's a nickel. Adoree Jackson, 1 year, 6 million. He's 28 and a half.
Yeah, I've always liked him for some reason. I would say yes. And it's a 1 year. I guess like I should go back when I said no to 1 year deal. 1 year deals aren't bad. Throw
Yeah.
three or four 1 year deals at some guys.
Yeah. Like, yeah, if you could land, like, if you got Gilmore and Adoree Jackson and you already have Emmanuel Mosley, like,
Yeah, and
it
Sutton,
makes.
like they are.
Yeah.
It's not, at least they have experience. They could keep throwing
Yeah.
experienced guys out there.
Yep. I'm a no on Adoree. I don't know why. I do. I know I get what you like, but I don't know. Keyshawn Nixon. 2 years, 4.2,
Oh,
27.
really? Yeah,
Yeah.
I'd sign him.
This special teamer alone,
All
he
right.
might be worth that, right?
Yeah, just to
Big.
throw in the mix there too.
Yeah. Sean Murphy Bunting, 1 year, 4 million, he's under 27.
What happened to him?
He just fell off.
I guess, yeah. I
Yeah.
guess I'm a no, but
He
it should be a
rebounded.
yes.
He fell off and then rebounded and then fell off again. And he's just been up and down. He's just been
We just don't
inconsistent.
know what part of the bounce he's on yet.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in him. Emmanuel Mosley, we already
You
talked
already have
about.
him.
And then it gets like Miles Brandt. I don't, again, I don't know enough about Brandt to give it a comment on
Yeah, it's
him.
going to be a bunch of no's.
Akilah Witherspoon, I actually like. I don't, he had a down year last couple. He's 1 year, 3 million. He's 29. I actually don't mind a kilo. I'd be a yes for him. Ronald Darby, 1 year, 2.5. He's 30. That's not bad.
This wouldn't be bad. Yep.
Yeah, like there's some 1 year guy. Like, I guess
Hopefully they find two of those guys and bring them
right.
in.
Yeah, like the point of this exercise is that there's a couple of guys out there that you can like. If you add a couple of those guys, or maybe if they pull off a trade or something like that, because there's some trade options out there, or if they land a starter, this is the way I'm kind of looking at it. I want them to land a starter in free agency, and then I want them to draft a guy who they can develop, and then add another guy for depth. That's three guys. That's three different ways I want to approach it, and that's what I'm hoping that they do. So I'm hoping for
Now,
two
that's not
guys in free
crazy to
agency.
me. Yep.
Okay, all right.
So
Let's
do they
do.
have the money for two big big name guy, you're thinking no, signing two players on defense
I think
for a significant investment. They can't do that.
No, I think they could. I think because of how the cap is, I think they could, but I don't think they're going to spend like upper tier. I think they're going to want to back that tier down and then add a couple of them, right? Mm-hmm. So like if they do add a starting corner, you know, then you can maybe also go after a starting, you know, like a starting defensive tackle, or maybe you add some more depth on your edge, right? So like as far as like the defensive tackles go, like we just talked about Chris Jones, Christian Wilkins is probably going to price himself out. He's going to be like $25 million a year. Like, yeah. I don't think the Lions are going to pay that. That's, you know, a lot. I think Leonard Williams, even though he's like 30, they're talking about 18, 17 million for him.
How
I
many
think
years?
At 17.
For some reason, that feels like the Snacks Harrison deal. That would be like bringing
maybe.
Back Snacks.
No,
which, I don't know. He was kind of terrible at the end, but he was fine at the beginning.
No, I like DJ Reader a ton, and I think he would be a perfect fit. But
what's
at
the numbers on him?
3 years, 15.2. He's
Jesus,
just
only
under
3 years.
He's just under 30. Problem is you're going to also have to pay Aleem under that deal as well,
yeah,
which is.
Yeah.
But I think Reader
who
is
would you
one of
rather
my.
have?
He's one of my favorites, though. I think I'd like to have Reader again at 30 years, though. That gets a little, things get a little tricky. Grover Stewart is 3 years, 11, and he's over 30. Sheldon Rankins used to play with Aaron Glenn in New Orleans. He was on that defense when Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell were there. He was not great near the end of his time there. 2 year, $10 million for him is seems like a lot. He's
Yeah.
again right at age 30. T.R. Tartt played for the Lions' new defensive line coach last year in Tennessee. He's 27. They're talking about 3 years, $7 million for him. I don't know. I don't know. Like, and then after that, we're starting to get a little bit like, hey, are you going to take a gamble on 33-year-old Fletcher Cox or 32-year-old Daquan Jones? It
That's
gets a
like the
little bit
Alu-Alu dude. That's like who's the next
trickier.
Tyson Alu-Alu?
Right. Right.
Like,
Yeah.
one of those guys.
I think Kinlaw is interesting to me. Javon Kinlaw is
that'd be an interesting
right.
one.
He's only 26 and a half. His grades have been terrible from PFF, but a 1 year, $5.5 million deal. That's a lot of fun. Shelby Harris is, he's 33. The talk like the Alu-Alu type of thing. Like I think 1 year, $3 million for Harris. That'd be okay as a stopgap. Like those are the names that stand out. You know, Bilal Nichols is interesting to me. He's had a bad couple of years. He was with the Bears and with the Raiders, but he's still 28. And I liked the way he played back then. So I don't know. Puna Ford's always a guy who is interesting to me. I don't know if he's quite the guy he was when he was with Seattle. Yeah. I mean, from a defensive tackle standpoint, I think the ideal marriage of what you're willing to live with from a cost perspective and the type of player you're getting, DJ Reader is the guy I would prefer, but that's going to cost a lot. You're going to pay more for DJ Reader than you're going to pay for a corner. And I don't know if that makes a lot
rather
of sense.
Spend, yeah, you'd rather use the money
Right?
on a corner. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do the edge and then I'll let you go here. Real fast. So we talked about Hunter maybe being a no at $22 million. Bryce Huff, interesting, but he's at 16.6, a 3 year deal for 16.6. He's only 26. He's had a couple of really exceptional pass rushing seasons recently. Former Baltimore Raven, then he was with the Bears, now he's with the Jets. So he's kind of bounced around a little bit. Interested in him. I just don't know if I'm willing to pay again more for a defensive lineman than I'm willing to pay for a corner type of thing.
Right.
So that would kind of take him off my board. I'm not interested in Chase Young, especially seeing Chase Young chase down Jahmyr Gibbs on his touchdown. A lot of people like Jonathan Greenard from the Texans. They're projecting he's going to get a 4-year, $19 million deal. That's a
Wow.
ton. That's a ton. And I don't like, I'm out of it for that. I would rather take a Jadeveon Clowney at a 1-year, $9 million, at 31. You know what I mean? I'd
Right.
rather add a guy like him. But again, I don't know if he fits in stylistically.
Does he love football as much as Dan Campbell does?
Right. Za'Darius Smith is a Lion killer for a long time, right?
Right.
And
So is
former
Danelle
Raven,
Hunter.
yeah. Former Raven, former Packer, form, and now he's with the Browns last year. I don't he's 2 for 12 is what they're suggesting for him.
12 a year.
Yeah, 12 a year.
Okay. At
Two of
least it's
12
only
a
a 2 year
year.
deal. Yep.
He's 31 and a half. I think if you could get him down to a 1 year deal, it's a little bit more palatable, especially if you can get down to like 10 million instead of 12. I'd be a lot more interested in it. Josh Uche, former
The
Michigan.
Michigan. Yep.
Yeah, he'd be a perfect Sam. I don't know if I'd be willing to pay $7
Yeah,
on
I
a
don't
one
know.
for a guy who's basically going to play Sam.
Right.
Leonard Floyd, I think, would be in that same boat. I think Leonard Floyd is a Sam with the Lions. He's not a starter. He'd be a pass rusher that you bring out that can do a few things, but they're talking about 1 year, $6 million for him because he's 31. The guy that everybody wants to talk about is Andrew Van Ginkle. He's 28 and a half, 2 years, $6.5 million. He
Oh, that's
is
not bad. But
no,
he's
I
not
look,
big.
no, he's not big. He's another Sam.
Yeah.
But he is actually a Sam who can drop and cover, whereas you probably don't get that out of Leonard Floyd and Uche as much, but Van Ginkle can drop and cover. So you get a drop and cover guy, you get a guy who's been a terrific pass rusher for the last couple of years. And if it's only $6.5 million, yeah, he's worth it. I just don't know if Miami's going to let him leave. At the same time, Miami's kind of in a bad spot cap wise, so who knows? But like, he's a guy I said the Lions should be interested each of the last 2 years. I've been kind of pinpointed him. I just don't know if Miami, maybe I'm burned by the fact that Miami hasn't let him leave, right?
Right.
But he's a guy that if he's actually at that 6.5, I'd give him 2+. You know, I'd give him a 3-year deal at 6.5. Even though he's 28 and a half, I'd still give him 3 year deal. Like, I think Van Ginkle makes a ton of sense. It fills that missing gap for you. Everybody wants to bring him up in Detroit. Again, if he gets out of Miami, I say go after him. But if he doesn't, I don't expect him to. DeNico Autry played at Tennessee last year, so that's going to draw attention. Problem is he's 30, almost 34. So I don't know how well he would be as a $7 million edge rusher at age 34, even though he has been productive. Calais Campbell is very interesting to me, especially
How
because
old is he?
he is 37,
All right.
but I like him in the same vein that I liked Alualu, right?
Right.
I don't know if $7 million is worth it.
Yeah, but at least it disappeared. The thing is, they're not, if they go over the cap this year. And what goes over the cap is the 1 year, $7 million deal. Like Clay can't. What's the big deal? Like it's going to be gone next year, anyways.
Right. Last guy I wanted to bring up was AJ Epenesa, former
Who's good at
Iowa.
Iowa? Yep.
Yeah, good at Iowa.
Who's Buffalo Bill?
3 year, 6.75, coming off a very good season. He's 25 and a half.
That's an interesting guy right there.
Yeah, and that's not a bad price tag. So Epenesa is a guy. Again, him and Van Ginkle are guys that I think you can get at values, for the position, but you're getting guys that are going to be, they can fill roles for you, right?
Right.
And so those are kind of the two guys that have stood out to me. I think if you have the money to throw at one of the top guys, great, you're going to get better, but not a lot of people do. And so those other guys kind of stand out to me. I'll mention one more just because he played in New Orleans, and that's Marcus Davenport. I just don't know. I mean, he didn't play well in Minnesota last year. They didn't seem interested in him during that. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's
He,
free agency. That's why they become
right.
free agents, because we don't
Right.
know. You know? Some of them work out.
1 year, $5 million is what PFF is suggesting. He's 27 and a half. I think the Lions, it's possible because of that connection. You always have to say maybe they'd consider him. I'm not as big in on him as I would like be a guy like Van Ginkle or Epenesa. I do think Davenport, though, might be on the Lions' radar. And that's about it. That's the edge guys. So I don't know. It's they got some options, you know, and there's some targets that they can go after late. I think like in the second or third wave of free agency. I don't know who like I don't know if there's like a guy that I'm like screaming for though. You know what I mean? And that's what I was hoping to have a guy that was like he fits in that first wave that you want to go after.
Right.
And I'm sure it'll make sense like once it happens, but I don't have a gut feeling. I like a like you said, I kind of like spreading the money out over like five or six guys and just trying to get better. I would like a starter. I do think I'm willing to pay at corner, but those other positions, I'm okay taking backups and see where it goes.
Right, and we'll see. Is there going to be further development out of James Houston? You know, if you're talking about pass rushing, who knows?
Yeah.
That's it. We got a couple of boost, a rating or two boost in Apple Podcasts. We got another handful in Spotify, so that's great. So we appreciate that. None of them are written reviews, but you know, that's fine. You rate us, please. That's great. If you're just listening, that's great too.
From a programming standpoint, we'll see when we can get back together again because free agency will be kicking and we'll do our best to get back on once that, you know, first kind of wave settles
That first
down.
wave settles. Yeah,
Yeah,
maybe the Lions will have somebody new.
exactly. But when we talk next, we'll talk about free agency and who they will have acquired at that point. My life just gets really tricky during free agency, especially the first 5 days of free agency, because they sign guys at all hours of the night and there's just constant work to do. So we'll do our best to get back on the air as soon as we can, as fast as possible. But free agency might throw a little wrench in there, depending on what they do. So it's gonna be exciting. It's gonna be exciting to watch it all unfold.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. We'll see where this team heads next. And that's it for us this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.